Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 115. I'm recording it on Saturday, March 28th, 2009. The P10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. The title of this particular selection is Blue Paint. And the title of the podcast is Internet Censorship is an Investment Topic. I've recorded, look, 115 podcasts. I've got four unique investing calculators at my website, calculators that don't exist anywhere else on the internet except John Walter Russell's site. John Walter Russell is the co-producer of the calculators. John's website, if you haven't checked it out yet, you want to do that before the close of business today. His website is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. So I've got 115 podcasts. I've got four calculators. I've got probably 100 articles on investing at the website. I've got tens of thousands of posts at discussion boards. And people, and my views on investing are quote-unquote controversial. They're common sense is what they are. And it's sad that common sense has become controversial, but all the same, they're controversial today. But a question that I get asked all the time is, you know, Rob, what kind of investing expert are you? You know, you're telling people where to put their retirement money. You know, what kind of street cred you got, man? One of my favorite posters of all time, Sershnitz, asked me that one time. He says, Rob, you don't have any street cred. Get some street cred and come back. And, you know, I don't know what you have to have street cred to talk about investing, but whatever kind of street cred all the experts have, where they've been telling us it's okay to stay at the same stock allocation when prices are insanely dangerous, I don't want that kind of street cred. They can keep it. I'll tell you my street cred. Never been to school, never studied investing. I studied, I don't know, I think I took four accounting courses, maybe four economics courses, if that counts for anything. You know, I have a law degree. I have a master's in tax law. So, you know, I've read books on investing. I've read lots of books, lots of articles, participated on discussion boards. That's my biggest street cred. You know, I've been participating on discussion boards daily. With guns aimed at my head for 7 years. That's street cred, as far as I'm concerned. But never took a course in investing, have no degree in investing, never managed a mutual fund, never advised clients, have no interest in doing so now or ever. Somebody wanted me to learn the stuff in the textbooks, they'd have to pay me a lot of money because I've got a lot of other things I'd like to do with whatever days I have remaining to me, and that's not at all high on the list. So, what kind of investing expert am I? I'm a journalist. I'm a journalist. That's how I made my living. I worked at a place called Daily Tax Report for many years. I loved it. I covered Congress, wrote about tax bills going through Congress. Then I worked at a place called Tax Notes Magazine, managed a database there of documents on taxation and wrote a weekly column called Tax Politics. Then I went to the Ernst & Young accounting consulting firm, and I was a lobbyist there for a number of years, and then I became manager or director of a writing center. We would it was in the National Tax Department of Ernst & Young, and we would write about any development, tax regulations, tax legislation that people all over the world needed to know about our clients, and then we would write that up, and the offices all around the world could use those materials. And I was the director of that center, that writing center. Does that qualify me to tell you how to invest? Well, yes and no. I know that there are laws that I don't know what they are exactly. I have a vague idea, but there are limits to what kinds of investing advice people can offer without being qualified. And so if somebody sends me an email and they says, "Rob, what do you think of I'm going to put all my money in, Campbell's soup, And I'm like, I don't know. Don't ask me. Ask somebody who's qualified to answer that question. I don't know. That's not something I do. Not something I want to do. Not something I'm able to do, capable of doing. So what kind of investing expert am I? Well, I'm a journalist. What I do is I report. So the way I always describe it is I tell people the realities of stock investing. Now, the conventional view would be either that that's not a role that needs to be filled. Some people seem to have the idea that the only way you can be an investing expert is to manage a mutual fund, That makes you an investing quote-unquote expert. If you do that, you should be quoted all over the place. You're a big grand pooba. You know everything. And if you don't do that, you don't know nothing. You got no place at the table. Well, I disagree. I think we need a lot more effective journalism in this field. Boy, do we need that. I look at things... Going to say the second view. One view would be we don't need that, and the other would be that there are already people doing it effectively. People would say, there are journalists at the Wall Street Journal or at Money Magazine, and I'm sure there are good ones. I don't mean to slight anyone, but I am here to say the state of investing. I say our knowledge of how stock investing works is primitive. Well, the state of journalism in this field is sad. Sad. Now, there's good stuff. The Wall Street Journal is a wonderful newspaper. I don't subscribe today, but I used to. And it's a fantastic newspaper. And I love Money Magazine. I don't subscribe to that either. But, every now and then I'll pick one up. And I think, for the money, you get a fantastic amount of information. So, I don't want to come off as critical, but I sort of do, because it should not be possible to do what I have done. I'm just a guy who posts stuff on the internet. That's it. I like to think I've posted some good stuff, but that's it. And yet what you have at my website is information on investing that some of it is not available anywhere else in the world. The most obvious example is the Retirement Risk Evaluator. I discovered 7 years ago that the studies that we all use to plan our retirements, that all the financial planners use, now maybe not everyone, but the vast majority use these old school safe withdrawal rate studies, and they all get the numbers wildly wrong, nowhere's close to being accurate, because they don't include an adjustment for the valuation level that applies on the day the retirement begins, and you can't get the number right without that. That's the most important factor in determining what's safe. Now, how could some guy who posts stuff on the internet discover that and nobody else knew about it? I can't, you know, there are some questions that you just can't answer. I can give theories, and I've done that, and you can listen to, you know, earlier podcasts where I discuss that kind of thing. But the bottom line is, it's crazy. It just shouldn't be possible. And now I've got a calculator that went up at my website last week, the investment strategy tester, that tells people how they can make back all the money they've lost in the stock crash just by switching to valuation-informed indexing, by switching from the conventional approach to indexing to the valuation-informed approach. They can make back all the money they lost in the stock crash. Could there be a more important story? Could there, you know, the problem we're dealing with this economic crisis is that middle-class workers have lost confidence in the market, and they've lost confidence in their economic and political leaders. Well, what could we do that would better restore confidence than telling them how to make back all the money they lost in the stock crash? That's the thing that caused them to lose confidence. Is that a big story or what? Now, I'm going to call some people or email some people and try to get some attention devoted to that. I'm going to do that. I'll probably try Felix Salmon, because Felix Salmon, he has a successful blog, and he wrote up an article, a good article, about the stock return predictor. So I think I'm going to send him an email about the investment strategy tester. And, you know, I might contact some other people. Probably will. But do I have great confidence that, you know, within the next 10 days, there's going to be a front page article in the Wall Street Journal telling people how they can get back all the money they lost? I do not. Now, if I had a good contact at the Wall Street Journal, I think I could get that article. I think there are people interested in the subject, certainly. But all I can say is the system as a whole works very poorly. There should be a place I could go to and know, sure as shooting, that when I tell them that story about the investment strategy tester or about the retirement risk evaluator or about the stock return predictor that or about the scenario surfer, the investor scenario surfer, any of those, I should be able to take any of those calculators and go to a website that reports on, or, you know, a magazine or a newspaper that reports to people about investing topics and know with no question whatsoever that I'm going to get front page treatment. These stories are burn the house down stories. I'm a journalist, and I think I should know. I should be able to recognize a story when I see one. And I don't have one great story. I've got 20. I'm not bragging, or at least that's not the, you know, it's not the intent. I'm marveling. And what I'm saying is there's something lacking here. There's something lacking here. And I know that these people, you know, you can get paranoid and you can say, oh, it's a grand conspiracy, but I don't really believe that. So you have to come up with a different explanation. And I think part of what's going on is that a phenomenon that I see going on is that there's a small group of quote-unquote experts. And as I say, they tend to be people that manage mutual funds. They're numbers people, and they can talk the lingo of the investing expert, you know, sharp ratios, this other BS. Not that there's no place for sharp ratios, but they use these words and these concepts to intimidate, whether intentionally or not. That's the effect. And so they talk this language that intimidates, and everybody bows down and thinks they know everything, and they just don't. They're also good people and smart people, but they sure don't know everything. And they're covering up what they don't know with this lingo. And the job of, you know, I'm familiar with this phenomenon because I covered Capitol Hill. So I was writing about politics a lot of the time. I mean, I was writing about tax legislation, but you were always trying to figure out the politics of the bill because you had to tell your readers, is this provision going to go through? Is it not going to go through? And I wrote a column on tax politics. So I think I know a thing or two about politics. And in politics, it's universally accepted that you don't just take everything at face value. That if a, you know, if a guy's running for office, guy or a woman, and he says, you know, I'm going to balance the budget, you know, you don't just say, oh, candidate Joe Smith is going to balance the budget. You know, the job of a journalist is to be a little bit skeptical, to say, yeah, sure you are. You know, what are you going to cut? You know, you come back with a question. What are you going to cut exactly? You're going to balance the budget. Whose taxes are you going to raise? You're going to balance the budget, Mr. Balance the Budget Man. You know, you're polite. That's the job, or you should be. But you're skeptical, or you're not doing the job. If all you're doing is retyping a press release, they don't need to pay you a reporter's salary. They can just get some, you know, they can get some intern to retype press releases. But in the investing field, I really feel that to a large extent, that's what we're getting. We're getting people retyping press releases. And I don't mean a personal dig, but it has to be said. The state of the level of skepticism is poor. What's happening is these grand poobahs, the stock selling industry grand poobahs, put out this line of BS that you don't have to change your stock allocation when prices get insanely dangerous. And then all the journalists in the field just regurgitate it. Oh, yes. Passive investing is best for the long term. Stocks for the long term. Buy and hold. Stay the course. You can't time the market. No. Can't time the... Holy moly. Do any of these people realize that the people telling us that we can't time the market have a vested interest in telling us that? That they make money when we buy stocks, and telling us that we should always be putting most of our retirement money in stocks is to their financial benefit? Did that thought ever occur to anyone other than me? I'm not even faulting the experts so much. I do fault them, but I think you have to put it in context. And you know, would you fault a used car salesman who tries to sell you a car? I mean, that's his job. If you went up to a used car salesman and said, does this car run? Is this car going to break down in a week? What do you think he's going to say? He's going to say, oh, it's a beauty. It's a beauty. Oh, person who owned this car, they took such care of it. That engine just purrs like a kitten. This is a, oh, you're getting a steal. I've sold some cars in my day, but you, oh, I could just tell when you walked in the lot, you're not the kind of guy who's going to buy any old used car. Have you been around a little bit? Yeah, I knew it. You have been around the block more than once or two, more than once or two times, my new friend. And I'm not going to be able to sell some of these other cars. No, they're not for you. But this car, oh, the car you're looking at, that is a beauty, my friend. That is a car that you are, I shouldn't sell it to you at this price, but, you know, I appreciate, I would like this car to go to somebody who's really going to appreciate it, and I can tell that you're that sort of individual. So it would make me very happy to sell this car to you, even at this price, even though you're killing us on the price. That's his job. You can't fault the sharks, you know, for eating the stupid swimmers, you know. Sharks eat swimmers. That's what they do. People who had mutual funds try to get people to buy mutual fund shares. Come on. These people can do better. We've got to challenge them. We've got to ask some hard questions. We've got to stop bowing down and praying to them, you know, as if they are gods and goddesses. And we've got to start asking them some questions so that we will be able to retire on time. And the middle class investors need to do this, but, you know, the journalists need to do it too. So my point here is, I'm a journalist. That's what I am. That's my niche. I'm no mutual fund manager. I like these guys. Happy to talk to them. Some of them have exchanged emails with me, and I'm grateful. I think they've been a big help. Michael Kitsis was fantastic. Scott Burns was great. Bill Bernstein, I've learned stuff from. You know, lots of others. I don't mean to just, you know, single out a few, but boy, I'm a journalist. So, you know, if you're saying what street cred do I have? The street cred I have is I know how to look stuff up on the internet. I know how to do a search. I know how to interview people. I know how to ask questions. I know how to look for logical flaws in an argument. I like to think I know how to present a story in a balanced way. I think that's a journalist skill. That you don't, you know, just buy what one side tells you, even if it's the side, you know, you're sort of kind of rooting for. You got to tell the other side. That's sometimes you got to put up lines that you don't want to put up, but that's the job. And I think I can, you know, organize a few words into a paragraph. Well, you know, whether you think that's an important job or not, you decide, but it's my job. And I, you know, I take some pride in doing the best I can at it. Now, I need to remind myself every now and then of the title of the podcast so I don't run too far afield. Internet censorship is an investment topic. I'm talking about internet censorship. So I haven't even mentioned the word internet censorship yet, but I have to start by saying, you know, how do I come to this field? Everything I do is produced by a journalist. So I come to these issues with the eyes and the mind and the heart and the skills of a journalist. You know, please don't forget that, because that shapes everything you see. You know, I was talking to my brother Steven, on the phone earlier this week, and we were talking about, you know, we had a few minutes to talk about this investment stuff. And you know, I don't know. We started talking about different things, and it's, you know, I'm just explaining. I think it was this calculator. This calculator had come out that day, and you know, it's just blowing my mind. I'm looking at that. The default results where it tells people how to get all the money back they lost in the crash, and I'm saying, Stephen, you know, I've got the biggest story. You know, you dream of having. I remember when I was hoping to get the job at Daily Tax Report, you know, and I how certain things stick in your memory years later. And I had finished law school. I had gone to law school intending to be a journalist, a tax journalist. I never intended to practice law. And I finished and I didn't want to take a job in a law firm, because I said, if I do, I'll never get out, you know. And of course, when you go to law school, the easiest thing to do, the course of least resistance, is to go to work in a law firm. And then what happens is, of course, they start paying you more money than any journalism job is going to pay you. And then you say, I can't change, you know. And I didn't want to go down that path. And it was a big crisis in my life. And it was a bad time. I finished law school. The economy was bad at the time, and it was hard to get a job. And I was willing to take just about any journalism job, but I wanted a journalism job though that would, you know, take advantage of my legal skills. But anything along that lines. But I wasn't willing to take a job that would get me going in the wrong direction. And so I was out of work for a good bit of time. And then I interviewed for this job at Daily Tax Report, and I was like, this is the job for me. This is it. This is it. This is, you know, please God. I wasn't a church going person at the time, but I was praying, you know. I said, I'll break down and pray on this one. And I remember sitting out there, you know, in front of the building and just saying, God, you know, let me get this job. And I got that job. And I loved that job. And, you know, I was, you know, but you dream. You know, I mean, the first job I had at Daily Tax Report was some stupid thing. And I was writing up these stupid rulings. I mean, it's just mindless, moronic stuff. And of course, you dream, and then you'd move up a little bit. You'd get a better position. And I would dream about having a big story. And eventually, I had some good stuff. I had some fun times there. But you would dream of the big story. Well, now, I'm sitting on the biggest story, you know, of my lifetime. I'm sitting today on a bigger story than I ever thought I could ever sit on in my lifetime. I mean, you know, I'll tell you what I think. I don't know if I've ever said this. I think this story is bigger than Watergate. Watergate is the biggest story probably of my lifetime. There's other big ones, but, you know, Vietnam War was a big story. You know, there's other big ones, but man landing on the moon was a big story. A 911 was a big story. But if, you know, if I had to pick one of my lifetime, I'd pick Watergate because it reached out. And the Lewinsky, that was a big story. That was another one. The reason I picked Watergate is because it reached in so many directions. It affected so many areas of life. You know, it wasn't just impeachment. It was journalism. You know, what's the role of journalism? And you know, the powers, the enemies list, the powers of the president against his enemies, all this. It tied in all these things. The economy had a big effect there because the economy is what weakened Nixon, really, politically. When the economy went down, a lot of his supporters ran for the hills. So there were all, there were Supreme Court challenges. Remember, he was supposed to name somebody to, was it Attorney General or something? And it was getting, you know, all kinds of things were going on, all kinds of things. And the taping, you know, the tapes, should he release them? Should he destroy the evidence? It was all kinds of stuff. And the same thing was true. That the other one where that was true was the Lewinsky thing. That one tied in everything, you know, just everything. Went in 50 directions. So that to me is a big story and one that went on for years. So I think of Watergate as being the biggest story. But I think, in my mind, you can laugh if you want, but the great safe withdrawal rate debate is bigger than Watergate. That's my opinion. It doesn't involve a president being removed. But the whole reason I got out of politics, where I used to make my living, and got into personal finance journalism is I came to the conclusion that politics doesn't really affect people's everyday life. You see, when I was younger, I thought, oh, politics is about change and it affects people and that's what I care about. And so I'm going to tell people what's going on in their life. But I came to the conclusion that most politics is a, you know, it's kabuki theater. You know, it's just a show they're putting on. And, you know, every year they'd say we're going to balance the budget and they would never do it. And it got to a point I had followed it enough times that I knew all the tricks they were going to pull out of the hat at the last minute. And, you know, it got boring. And I said, I don't want to spend the remaining years of my life writing about, you know, pulling rabbits out of hats. I want to do something that affects the average person. And I said, look, why not teach them how to achieve financial freedom early in life? Because that's what I, you know, I ended up doing that for myself. And I said, yeah, that's that, you know, changed my life, gave me options I never had before. Maybe it would do the same for lots of other people. So I started writing about that and then fell very much against my will into the investing side. I had no interest in investing. It was forced against my will. I mean, almost at gunpoint, you know, to write about investing and to learn about investing. I had to learn about it before I could write about it. Was forced to learn about it. And then after I learned about it, was forced to write about it because the stuff I learned was so mind-blowing. And nobody else is writing about it. You know, there are people who write about it, but it's 10% of the investing quote-unquote experts. And the ones who write about it, almost all of them are at this different level. You know, you can who's the guy? Jeremy Grantham. I was listening to a podcast. You know, I released them at the site about 2 months after I record them because I've got so many on the waiting list. And so the Jeremy Grantham one just came out or is coming out Monday. And I was listening to it this morning before I put it out. And Jeremy Grantham, you know, it was called Jeremy Grantham Tells the Truth, Straight No Chaser, about stock investing. And it was fantastic. Jeremy Grantham is a stand-up guy. tells the truth about stock investing. But, you know, Jeremy Grantham is not going to connect in general with the average middle-class investor, because to find his site, you've got to be a little sophisticated. And the average person is intimidated. And, I don't think I'm intimidating. Maybe people find me, but, you know, I feel like I talk conversationally and I write conversationally. And, it can't be real complicated or I wouldn't understand it. So I'm not going to talk about Sharpe ratios. You know, that's sort of a standard joke here. But Index Universe once told me I wrote an article for them and the publisher loved it and wanted to publish it. And the editorial guy was friends with Mel Lindauer. And he said, I can't run that because it makes Mel Lindauer look bad. And he said, I'm not going to run any articles unless you include a reference to Sharpe ratios. And he knew that would get rid of me because I'm never going to mention Sharpe ratios except as a joke. But the point is, you know, there's great people out there like Jeremy Grantham that you can learn from and lots of others. But, you know, they're not really writing for the average person. They're writing for fairly sophisticated investors. And I'm writing for the type of investor who follows John Bogle, who's looking for a simple approach. So I really think I'm just about the only one doing this. And it just amazes me. On the one hand, it causes me a lot of trouble because, the goons are able to attack me, and a lot of people don't know what to make of it. They say, well, Rob sounds reasonable. He sounds like a good guy, but these goons hate him with a passion. And it's true that what he's saying isn't the same thing as what John Bogle's saying. So maybe they're right. Maybe he is a, mental case, So in that way, it hurts me. But of course, it helps me in that the field is totally open. There's no one else out there doing it. So if it ever catches on, I feel like, holy moly, I could take the football and go 90 yards. And it shouldn't be that way. I should have competitors to the left, competitors to the right, to the front and the back, and I don't have any. And man, oh man, I see things through the eyes of a journalist and I can't get over it. I'm just amazed, shocked and amazed, and yet it's real. I cannot deny. So the purpose of this podcast is to focus in on some of those questions, some of the journalistic questions. And I was saying I wanted to finish the story about my brother, and then I'll focus in on those journalistic questions. But I was talking to my brother, and I was saying, look, we've got to get this out to people. We've got an economic crisis. And I said, and I do think this, I said, Steve, if we don't solve this crisis, and we really go, people are comparing it to the Great Depression. Well, I don't know how serious people are when they say that, but people better think about what that means, because if we really go into a Great Depression, the last time we barely pulled out of it, that was in the pre-nuclear era. What do you think's going to happen if everybody's suffering like they were in the Depression? And it won't just be us. It'll be all over the world. And in a nuclear era, what do you think's going to happen? It's going to be a nuclear war. Game over. Forget about the trouble of financing your retirement plan. Don't even worry about it. That one's gone. You don't need to worry. No worry. I basically feel we have two choices here. We got one, we blow up the world, in which case I don't have to worry about how my stocks do, how my retirement plan does. And the other is we pull out of this. And if we pull out of this, I see us heading into the golden age of middle-class investing, because I've seen the wonderful stuff that's been published over the last 30 years that beats passive investing to death. And it's all free. It's all on the internet. I can link you to it. I can describe it. I can talk it up in a podcast. I can do all that. But you can't take advantage of it if you believe in passive investing. So, forget it. You believe in passive investing, you're doomed. Because you can't think straight. If you think that there's some imaginary world somewhere where stocks are the best choice no matter what price they're selling at, I can't help you. You go to some other website, because you know, there is no hope. In my opinion, that's my opinion. Take it or leave it. But if you truly believe that, there's no hope. Because that's the first thing you need to learn about stock investing to hope to be successful long term, is that the price you pay for the stocks you buy is the most important factor in determining whether you're successful or not. And if you're a passive investor, you never change your allocation based on price, which means for practical purposes, price doesn't matter for you. So there's nothing I can tell you. You've just taken all the strategic questions that matter off the table in one fell swoop. So I was just saying to Stephen, you know, we gotta get this story out. Gotta do something. You know, I was worked up because the calculator just came out, and he says, he says, you know, people, this has been going on since the beginning of the world. People are greedy. You know, they're greedy, and that's why they have stock crashes, and that's why they believe in passive investing, and blah blah blah. And I said, yeah, well, you know, some people maybe are greedy, but the people I talk to don't seem that greedy. I haven't experienced this. I've talked to lots of people. I haven't noticed them being particularly greedy. And if they're so greedy, why would they be investing in this mixed up way that never works? Is that really greed? I mean, that's a strange kind of greed. You know, John Graney, my archenemy, told me on a discussion board a couple weeks ago he's lost well in excess of $1 million in the stock crash. Is John greedy? Doesn't sound like it to me. If he was greedy, I think he'd want to keep the million. So I don't really see it. I don't see greed. Greed's a factor, but I think it's much overdone, much overplayed, exaggerated in terms of its impact. But he says, well, you know, and so I was making all these arguments, and they really were just journalism arguments. I was saying, basically, we got to get this story out. And he says, look, he says, if you want to bang your head against the wall, he says, you're more noble than me. You know, he's basically saying, you know, people aren't going to listen. And I said, well, I can't tell you if they're going to listen or not. I think they're going to listen, but, you know, I've got a lot of 7 years of experience saying you're right. So I can't tell you you're wrong, but I said, I don't think of myself as noble. You're saying I'm noble. I said, is it noble just to do your job? This is my job. I'm a journalist. You tell a story, you tell it accurately, you tell it fairly. And when you find a big story, you don't just leave it sitting there. You pick it up and you know, to me, that's the job. So it has nothing to do with being noble. You know, I like to think that I'm kind of sort of a good person, which I think 90% of the population likes to think of themselves. So I tried it. You know, I chose journalism because I care about it. I think it's important. But I don't think of it as noble just to tell the story accurately and balanced. So, but anyway, you know, it does not seem like there's a great interest in getting the story out. I've told this before, but it's brief enough, I can repeat it. I contacted USA Today a couple years back with the retirement risk evaluator and said, the only analytically valid retirement calculator on the internet. You interested? And the 3 words came back from the reporter that I contacted. Not for us. It just kills me. Not for us. There's nobody reading USA Today cares about their retirement plan working out. So I see the whole thing in terms of getting the story out. See, I don't even care about the substantive issues. I write about them because you have to. You can't write about investing without without exploring strategy and without exploring the numbers and all this kind of thing, you know. But the truth of the matter is, those things are all secondary to me. I do them because that's also part of the job. So, you know, like I have a podcast on the equity risk premium, and I think it's pretty darn good. There's been a lot of discussion in the academic literature about trying to explain the equity risk premium puzzle. And I did a podcast which I think explains it. I don't know for sure, but I think it does. I personally think it does. It certainly was worth, I think the ideas I put forth in that podcast are worthy of consideration, put it that way. And you know, I'm proud of that work, glad to have made that contribution, but even if I went down in history as being the person who solved the equity risk premium puzzle, it wouldn't excite me all that much. I want to go down in history as the guy who lifted the ban on honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other valuation-related topics. That's what I want to go down in history as. See, that's a process question. That's a journalist looking at the investing world. In other words, many people would rather solve the substantive issue. They'd like to be known as the person who figured out the equity risk premium rather than being known as the person who opened up the internet to honest posting on discussion of investing topics. I would rather be the one who opened the internet because I care about process as a journalist, because I believe that if we open up the internet to honest posting, we'll be figuring out the solution to the equity risk premium 100 times over. In other words, that was one podcast I did. I could do 100 of them. And not just me. There are thousands of people like me who could be doing this. But they can't do it if they don't have a place to tap into arguments pro and con. And there is no such place today. It stuns me and amazes me to say that. But there is no such place today. You tell me. If you say I'm wrong, I'm going to challenge you to send me an email. Tell me the name of a website I can go to and tell the truth about safe withdrawal rates and connect with people. Don't tell me some little bear site somewhere. I want a place where ordinary middle-class investors congregate in significant numbers and where I can tell them the truth about the retirement studies or any of these other topics. And share with them. You tell me. And I've tried the obvious ones. Tried Motley Fool. Tried Morningstar.com. Tried Bogleheads.org. I tried IndexUniverse.com. I tried Early Retirement Forum. What's it called? EarlyRetirement.org. Tried No Fee Boards when that was around. I tried recently the what's it called? Money Blog Network. So every place I've gone, lots of interest. Never has there been a problem. Always lots of interest. Always goons. There's always, you know, some of them just follow us around. The grainy goons, they type this thing into, there's some Google thing where if the word safe withdrawal rate comes up, they're alerted and they know to send in the goon squad. But others, you know, it's not always the grainy goons. At Vanguard Diehards, a lot of the people, the abusive posters were not in the grainy goon gang. They were legitimate posters. They were people who had been posting there before grainy ever showed up. So always lots of interest, always lots of good questions, always rules that protect us, every case, always abusive posting. Usually starts out quasi-abusive and then becomes increasingly abusive as you answer their questions. And ultimately becomes abusive. And always the site administrators fail to honor their word to protect us. Same pattern over and over and over again. And there are some hopeful signs. There were two blogs this week where I did guest blog entries. And the goons did show up. The grainy goons showed up. And they tried to disrupt. And I don't know. The good thing was the site owners did not take the threads down. That was the good thing. So people could read and make their own decisions. And of course, that's what you want. Now, I think probably in both cases they should have left some of those comments up. The ones that where the goons at least tried to put forward plausible questions reasonable questions. But in each case, they went over the line eventually when they became frustrated. When they went over the line, they should have been, those posts should have been taken down. So I'm not thrilled with the reaction we saw. But it was an improvement. Because in the past, what the goons have always done is they put up all this nasty stuff and they mix in legitimate questions, and I respond to the legitimate questions and ignore the truly nasty stuff, and then they say, we're taking this whole thread down because it's got this nasty stuff. As if an option available to them wasn't to take out the nasty stuff. So we've moved beyond that, at least in these two cases and a couple other cases recently. So there's signs that we're moving closer to where we need to be. But we're certainly not there. There were not a lot of, you know, there were some good comments by, you know, regular posters at both of those threads. So that was good. But not enough of them. You know, given the issues that were being addressed and the importance of them, I think we should have had more. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people are still intimidated. And a lot of people are very confused. A lot of people just don't know what to make of things. A lot of people feel if they say something, they're going to be ridiculed. And so, of course, once they see the goons appear, that does cause the average person to sort of drop out of the discussion. That's always been the edge that the goons have had, that they can easily intimidate people because they talk like they know. They know almost nothing, but they talk. And because they're a gang, you know, they will shout anybody down. But if that were to change, can you imagine what we would see? It would change the history of investing. I don't even know how anybody can argue that. The internet is a powerful tool to learn about investing because we can trade ideas with people all over the world. But the powerful tool is being used for negative purposes when we have people putting up demonstrably false retirement claims, and then nobody in the community questions them. The newcomer looks and says, oh, everybody must think this study checks out. They don't know that there's a ban on honest posting on the question. So the internet's being used to prop up and to promote false claims, dangerous, reckless claims. That's the state of play today. But what if we had honest posting? What if the ban on honest posting were lifted at all the places that it's been imposed, and just in general, a new attitude developed where people said, we're not going to permit, you know, goon attacks. We're not going to permit smear campaigns. We're not going to permit intimidation and deception and word games and all this sort of thing. Then we would have average people openly asking good questions. I've seen some wonderful, wonderful questions from average people. And I've run into hundreds of people who are well informed about how investing works, far better informed than these mutual fund managers that comprise the stock selling industry. Far, far better. And those people, think of some of the people we've seen on our boards: Mike Grolepsis, John D. Craig, John Walter Russell. What was his name? Sershnitz. There was a guy, Haha, at the Early Retirement Forum. There's so many of them. I think there was one Farmer Ed. There was Ben Solar. There was Petey Person. There was the Wanderer. Stubble Jumper, on and on and on and on. Those are just some of the names that come immediately to mind. If these sorts of people could post openly and freely, there's just no stopping us. No stopping us at all. And it would just spread. It would spread like wildfire. And blogs, have you noticed how many blogs there are today to tell people how to save? And none of that information was available. You see, if you weren't trying to put together a retire early plan in the 1990s like I was, you may not appreciate how much this has changed. But back in the 1990s, I used to go searching for the kind of information you can get on the internet today. It's like opening up a fire hydrant today. If you plug in you know, I want to learn how to save effectively, you're going to get 10,000 blogs to look at. And good stuff. People who have done it. You could read material on that and never stop the rest of your life if you wanted to. But on investing, try to find out how to plan your retirement, you know, effectively, with valuation adjusted numbers. If you find the retirement risk evaluator, fine. That's pretty much it. And that's just amazing. How could that be? The reason that is so is because it's censorship. It's censorship. And censorship, of course, censorship, it rubs a journalist the wrong way. We don't believe in censorship. That's why we're journalists. We believe in information, free information. Now, you know, I will say, all of the sites that banned honest posting did so reluctantly. I think almost in every case that's true. You know, it took 2 years at Morningstar before they imposed a ban. It took a year at Motley Fool. I think probably 2 years at Early Retirement Forum. It took probably 2 years at No Fee Boards. So they, you know, all these places, we have a sort of an ethic in our society in favor of free speech. And the internet, if anything, is known for being more open to free speech than most other places, but not on investing. And, you know, if you don't believe me, I'll put you to the challenge. I'll put you to the test. Go to bogleheads.org if you don't believe me and start a thread. You know, you can go under assumed name if you're afraid they're going to come after your kids. Go under assumed name. Start a thread. Say, I've just discovered the retirement risk evaluator. PassionSaving.com. Looks like a great calculator. Looks like it tells the true story on retirement planning. All the numbers are adjusted for valuations. What's everybody think? See what happens to you. Try it. Or try it at Vanguard Diehards, Morningstar.com. Or try it at the Retire Early homepage board at Motley Fool. Try it at Early Retirement Forum. See what happens. Can't do it. Now, you know, we can point to the individual people who brought on the ban, and I've talked about it before, so I'm bored with it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. But the bigger picture reason for why this censorship applies, internet censorship of investing discussions, is ideas have a life cycle. You know how people, we start out as little babies and we learn to crawl and, you know, we start grammar school and we eventually get to high school and college and we go off and get a job and we get married, we reach middle age. Yep, you know, trials and tribulations. We eventually get old, sick, die. You know, that's a brief description of our journey through the Valley of Tears. Ideas have a life cycle. Valuation-informed indexing / rational investing is a young, frisky idea. It's an idea reaching out. It's an idea saying, hey, look at me, and I'm not afraid of the world. I'm open to question. I'm open to challenge. I'll take on all comers because it's a young, frisky idea. It's not a baby idea. It's been developed for 7 years, so it's not in the infant stage anymore. It's sort of in the adolescent stage. It's feeling its oats, and it wants to be tested out in the big, bad world, and it might come back with a bloody nose. Might come back in a car accident. Might get its head bashed in. That's been known to happen. Or, you know, it might run for president, you know, and win. We'll see. We'll see. But that idea is in the early stages of the life cycle. The passive investing idea, the idea that you don't need to pay attention to valuations and setting your stock allocation, that idea is a dying idea. And this is why we need journalists. We need people with a journalism perspective in the investing field, because I think I, from my experience in journalism, I know a thing or two about a dying idea. And I can see that the passive investing idea is a dying idea. I saw that a long, long time ago. Long, long time ago. The day, I didn't see it starting out. I didn't see it on May 13th, 2002. But it was the day John Graney threatened to kill my children if I ever posted honestly on safe withdrawal rates again. And Motley Fool failed to act. And the board community, to a large extent, failed to act. Several people spoke up and said they didn't like it, but they didn't stop it. But they did. Some people did notify Motley Fool, and Motley Fool failed to act. And I said, you know, I, of course, was outraged at what had happened, but there was another part of me that said, you know, the journalist part, sort of standing aloof and standing above it all, said, passive investing is a dying idea. Because an idea that inspires confidence does not inspire death threats. Passive investing is a dying idea. Passive investing, really, it's worse than just dying. Passive investing is like a rabid dog. At once upon a time, it was winning prizes. And, you know, it was a big, strong, healthy dog. And it was winning prizes. And there was a day when this idea was the real thing, or at least appeared to be. But today, no. Today, I challenge you, find me somewhere where you can find someone making a rational defense of the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation in response to big price changes. Find me someone, one person who can do that. I'll take on all comers. I'll stand on a stage with John Bogle, and I will politely, because I love the man, debate him about the merits of passive investing, and I'll win. There's nothing he can say that I haven't heard and don't have a response to. And I may not be right on everything I say, but I can give a rational, I can give a reasonable response to any question he can raise. And he can't do the same. I know. Because many have tried. That's the sign of a dying idea. Passive investing is a dying idea. And that's why we have censorship. What's happened is, you know, this came up just the other week. There's a guy, Artie. He's a great community member, a lot of smart ideas. And he came to my site, and he was putting forward a lot of comments. And he was saying something. He listens in at Bogleheads. He doesn't participate there. And he was talking about Larry Swedrow. And Larry Swedrow has some ideas different than valuation-informed indexing. And Arnie likes them, and I think they sound like good ideas. I haven't studied them in depth, so I can't say. But they certainly sound like they're worth exploring. And he also liked Harry Brown's permanent portfolio idea. And Larry was sort of trying to get me to approve of these things. And I said, Artie, I'm sorry, if I said Larry, I meant to say Artie. Artie was trying to get me to approve of these things. And I said, Artie, the Harry Brown idea I looked at pretty seriously before I developed the valuation-informed indexing idea. So I think Harry Brown's got a lot going. Harry Brown is dead. But I think the Harry Brown idea has a lot going for it, theoretically. I said, it wasn't for me, but it might be the right thing for some other people. I said, I certainly don't say that valuation-informed indexing is the be-all and end-all. It's something I came up with for the average person, because it's simple. It's not complex. Harry Brown's is a little more complex, and Larry's is definitely more complex. And I said, Larry's idea, I haven't studied, but there may be merit. You know, I certainly don't say valuation-informed indexing is the only thing people should be looking at. I think for the right person, it's a great approach. And I think there are more people in that camp. There are more people looking for something simple. But, you know, I don't have time to explore everything under the face of the earth. So somebody else is going to have to pick up the ball and look at these other things. But he sort of kept coming back. Artie kept coming back, and he wanted me to say things about Larry Suidrow. And I said good things. I said Larry's smart, and Larry understands valuations better than most. And I said a lot of good things, but I also said, look, Artie, I got to tell you, Larry's got some real holes in his thinking, because Larry believes in the efficient market theory, and I've had conversations where Larry has said some things I think are just off the wall. And I think it's just because he's trying to defend passive investing. That's what's going on, and it's paralyzing him. I said, I got to tell you, that's my take on it. I said, I told him that once, and he said I was being patronizing. Well, I'm not trying to be patronizing. I'm trying to help him out. I'm trying to help him move on to the next stage of his thinking. But he gets huffy. And we went back and forth, and finally Artie just stopped responding, and I felt a little bad. You know, Artie hasn't sent any more posts. Maybe, you know, later on he will, but, you know, I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I didn't want him to feel that, I don't know, his comments are welcome. But my job is to let Artie say what he wants, but also to let people know when I have an opinion, what I think. You know, sometimes I don't have an opinion. I just keep my mouth shut. But I think, you know, that's part of the job, to let people know if I see some holes in it, to point them out, while also pointing out that I'm grateful for Artie making his case and that I acknowledge that I can get things wrong. I'm certainly not, you know, don't have any godlike powers. So, lurking underneath that discussion with Artie was this whole question of censorship. And I said at one point, because he doesn't want to acknowledge, for whatever reason, you know, I don't fully grasp it, but he doesn't want to say Larry goes along with censorship. Because I think it's so much against our image of ourselves as Americans to think that we would favor censorship of investing discussions, that to acknowledge that Larry posts at a board that has a ban on honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other valuation-related topics is... It's humiliating for Larry, and it should be, in my opinion. I would not associate myself with such stuff. I think it's humiliating to Bogle. If my valuation informed indexing idea catches on, and there are websites, you know, discussion boards discussing it, and I saw people behave the way I've seen people behave at Bogleheads.org and at Vanguard Diehards, I'd say take my name off that board. Either start behaving the way civil, reasonable people behave, or take my name off the thing, because I'm embarrassed. And Bogle's never done that. And there's nothing that Bogle has done that disappoints me as much as that, because that's a people question. You know, the passive investing stuff, I think to some extent he tries not to understand. But to some extent, he really doesn't understand. But he knows that the behavior we've seen on these boards is improper, and he doesn't do anything about it. And he knows that he has an obligation to people there, because those people love him and look up to him. And that's, you know, I find that very disappointing. But that's sort of what I'm trying to come to terms with here. And I think the answer is, he has associated himself with a dying idea. And a dying idea cannot survive questioning. There's a mountain of evidence that valuations affect long-term returns. There's a mountain of evidence that passive investing cannot work in the real world. And there's a desire to keep this idea alive a few more days, a few more weeks, a few more months, God help us, a few more years. There's a desire. For all sorts of reasons. Some of them financial. Some of them because people are just embarrassed. They don't want to admit they're wrong. Some of them because just, you know, cognitive dissonance. People, it's hard to admit that you're, you know, that all the 30 years of investing advice has been telling us the opposite of what works. It's shocking. It's scary. I think some people are really scared to open it up to a discussion of the realities. So for all sorts of reasons, there's a desire. But the idea is, it's like a corpse. They're propping up a corpse, and they're trying to, you know, get it to dance, and a corpse can't dance. It keeps falling down on the ground every time they try, and they put lipstick on, and they put rouge on, but the thing stinks at this point, and that's why they turn to censorship. They say, oh, you know, we can make it look nice. You know, we can make it smell nice. But it's temporary. It's temporary, and it's pathetic, and it's degrading. So the reaction I feel I get from people, a lot of times I bring these questions up. I always bring the censorship question up. I usually describe it as the ban on honest posting, because I think that's the whole ball game. You know, it's like people want me to come forth as this poobah. They want me to say, oh, Rob, you're the master. We stand at your feet. Tell us how investing works. And I'm like, huh? You know, find somebody else. No can do. I can't go for that. Not this boy. Not my thing. I ain't no poobah. Have no designs on the job. Find someone else. I'm a guy, what I want is to learn from all these people who believe in passive investing or who used to believe in passive investing. And of course, I you know, part of the game is you have to share what you know. You know, you can't expect to learn and not ever give. But that's where I'm coming from. And, you know, that means a lifting of the ban on honest posting. That means a lifting of the censorship. But the usual reaction I get is silence. I bring up the question of the ban on honest posting or the censorship, and people get real quiet. And it's because they're ashamed. They're ashamed. They're ashamed of the people who have degraded themselves by engaging in this ruthlessly abusive posting. They're ashamed of the people who gave bad advice that have caused millions of people to suffer busted retirements and millions of others to, you know, to delay their retirement plans by 5 years or 10 years. So there's all the shame. But where? How do people think it's going to end? Do people think it's going to end in a good way? The only way it can, I can give you a good ending. The good ending is we all start working together to learn together, and we all retire many years sooner. That's the good way to end it. But there is no other good way. Censorship can never produce a good result. Censorship is defensive. When you favor censorship, you have essentially announced, I'm a loser. I don't know what I'm talking about. I can't handle my end of the conversation. I'm pathetic. That's why people don't talk. Because they don't want to, you know, hurt these people's feelings. But my view from the first day has been we're hurting their feelings more by letting this charade continue. Passive investing has failed, people. It's been discredited. Now, if we lift the ban on honest posting and somebody comes up with some brilliant defense of passive investing, more power to them. That'd be great. That'd be wonderful. That would be, you know, front page news. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm certainly open. But at least if we discuss the thing, you know, as civil human beings, grown-ups, we get back our self-respect. And that's why people are silent when I bring up the censorship issue, because to accept what the passive investing dogmatists have done is, it's shameful. And we don't, you know, we're embarrassed for these people. But, you know, we should be embarrassed for them. And ultimately, the only thing that can really cure is open discussion. And now, of course, the censorship of, you know, safe withdrawal rates has spread, and it started out, it was censorship of safe withdrawal rates. You know, we just don't want people to know about the retirement numbers. We're going to pretend it doesn't matter. That spread until it became censorship of the flaws of passive investing in general. And now it's really bigger, because with the economic crisis, these investing issues are the dominant concern in the economic and political sphere. If we don't solve this economic, if we don't solve the passive investing problem, we don't solve the investing crisis. If we don't solve the investing crisis, our political system is in jeopardy. The stakes couldn't be any bigger. So, I guess, you know, my point here is, I'm going to try to, you know, I've always spelled out a two-prong approach that I take, and that is, be as charitable as we can possibly be. Always reach out the hand of kindness. Always be gentle. Always be loving. Always think, how would you feel if the shoe was on the other foot? But charity only goes so far as charity is compatible with honesty. When being charitable reaches a point where you have to be dishonest, that's where, you know, I get off the bus. Because dishonesty can never be charitable. Dishonesty is what's caused this problem. You know, thousands of layers of deception. Adding another 100 layers of deception to the thousands already in place is not the answer. So when it gets to a point where you have to post dishonestly, no. Then you post always in kindness, always with warmth, always with respect and affection, but honestly. And I cannot say that I believe the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically valid. I cannot say that and retain my honesty. So I will not say it. I post honestly or I post not. But there are all sorts of charitable things I can say and you know, that I don't think those mistakes were intentional. I think they were accident. I think they were a mistake. I think that the old school studies were a huge advance over where we were before. I think it'd be okay if people said they think it's their personal opinion that 4% is safe, as long as they don't say the historical data says it, and so forth and so on. That we've had great contributions from many of the people who have defended the old school studies, all that sort of thing. That's the charitable stuff. But we've got to have the honest part of it. And until we have the honest part of it, we don't have free discussion of investing topics. And so that means, this is the point of the podcast, censorship is an investing topic. It's the most important investing topic. Because if we over, you know, the censorship isn't just at the retire early boards and the indexing boards. That's where I've experienced it personally, but it's everywhere. You think we're the only people who have noticed that passive investing doesn't stand up to scrutiny? Remember the Rob Arnott story where he asked 200 academic researchers, give me a show of hands, how many here believe in the efficient market theory? And not one of the 200 researchers raised his or her hand. Then he said, how many of you will be using the efficient market theory in your research when you get back to the office on Monday morning? And nearly every hand in the room went up. That's censorship. When that story appeared, and I didn't hear about it because of any inside sources, I read about it on the internet. Well, why don't the reporters at the Wall Street Journal or Money Magazine read about it? And why don't they write a cover story interviewing each of the 200 academic researchers and trying to find out, why do you use the efficient market theory in your work if you don't believe in it anymore? That's the answer to our economic crisis. We need an enterprising journalist to write that story. But there's censorship in effect. It's not a law. There's no law has been passed saying you can't write about investing honestly. And there are a lot more honest articles nowadays than I used to see before the price crash. I mean, it's a factor. It's been multiplied by a factor of 50. You know, used to be you'd see one or two articles a year that really pointed out that the efficient market theory is nonsense. And now I see something like that probably three a week. So there's been a change. But the change hasn't been big enough that we yet have Money Magazine with a cover article on, you know, why the investing advice of the last 30 years is all wrong. Or what John Bogle got wrong. Or why we're going to see millions of busted retirements. You know, we haven't seen those articles yet. And until we see those articles, censorship applies. And censorship is an investment topic. It's the most important. More important than Sharpe ratios. Because if you have censorship, you can't put your trust in anything you read. It's a corruption. It's a loss of integrity in the discussions. If we don't get people exploring, you know, that story, of why the academic researchers are writing are doing research based on a theory they don't believe in, you can't trust anything else you see. Because it means that the people writing in this field are censoring themselves. They're afraid to tell the whole story. They're afraid to even pursue it. I'm not saying they know the whole story. I didn't know it when I started. The only way they're going to learn it is to take the first step. That's what happened in Watergate. The two reporters at the Washington Post, Woodward and Bernstein, took the first step. They started interviewing people. They started following leads. And one lead led to another, led to another, led to another, led to another. And that's how I have discovered the realities of stock investing. And that's what we need more people doing today. What we need in this field is not more mutual fund managers sitting up as grand poobahs and telling, you know, sharing all their wonderful wisdom with us. We need more journalists who aren't afraid to use up a little shoe leather figuring out what's really going on, why the investing advice of the past 30 years has been such a disaster, and why we've lost so much of our retirement money, and what we need to do to turn it around. We need to lift the ban on honest posting, and then, as I say, the system will take care of the rest. We won't learn everything in a day or a week or a month, but we will then, once the process is fixed, the substance will follow. We'll figure it out. We're smart people. We're good people. We'll figure it out. But we need censorship. Internet censorship is an investment topic, and it needs to be changed. And when it is changed, all the good stuff is going to follow. So says Rob Bennett. If you have thoughts or you want to respond to any of my challenges, please send me an email. Use the Contact Rob button at the left side of every page at the website, passionsaving.com. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.